Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, by the time this episode goes live, I think people will be traveling down to beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana for Gen Con.
Indeed they will. A number of my friends have already headed out on the great journey.
Good for them. So I know we want to talk a little bit about Gen Con. My main sort of Gen Con story is I was down in Indianapolis one year while it was going on, and I didn't realize that it was going on that weekend, so it was just like this crush of nerds wearing giant backpacks full of games everywhere we went, and I felt very, very nervous and like not sure if I should be allowed in the city at all. But it looked like a super fun time. I mean, and it is amazing to see, because I've been in Indianapolis other times, and like it's amazing to see just sort of how the city just transforms into this mecca for gaming there. But like, you've been a bunch, right?
Yeah, I've been to quite a few Gen Cons, and I'm not going this year. So if you're listening and you're on your way to Gen Con, or you're scrabbling to get to the game you scheduled at 8 a.m. or whatever, I'm very jealous and envious of you. So I love Gen Con. It's, you know, but it is a pretty big and expensive thing, you know, budget and time-wise. So I don't go every year.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're of course in the throes of sort of also planning Roll for Topic Con for this year, and we've realized that we need to actually schedule around Gen Con when it comes down to it. Yeah, so like when we were looking at dates earlier, it was like, well, we can't do the week before, during, or after Gen Con because people are going to be way more excited for that than for our little con, which is fine and understandable. Yeah. But yeah, so we know there's a handful of you that I'm sure are listening actually to this while you're traveling down there. Have lots of fun. We're really happy for you. Take some pictures and share them.
Yeah, so this is going to be kind of a short episode. Both Chris and I don't have a ton of time this week, and it's going to be kind of Gen Con focused. And Chris, can I lob a Gen Con-ish question out in your direction?
Oh, of course. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, so notice I started doing it even before you finished answering.
Yeah, just wait a beat, please.
So, you know, one of the many draws of Gen Con is that an awful lot of game companies try to get their new shiny game out and available by Gen Con. And if you go to Gen Con, you can often get it like a month or two before it hits general release. And you and I on this show don't do a ton of talking about like the latest, greatest shiny new RPG releases. Mm-hmm. But I am just curious if there's anything this year that if you were going to Gen Con, you would be making a beeline to the, you would be lining up in the gigantic line wrapping around the convention center to buy a copy of it.
Yeah, there's a couple things related to this. So one, I just got an email this morning from a Kickstarter that I kickstarted saying we will not actually have it ready for Gen Con, but here's a PDF sort of where we're at, which I'm sure there's a lot of those emails going out this week, which is very understandable. Trying to hit a deadline and then also have stuff ready for a convention. I mean, God bless anybody who's able to pull that off, but that,
I can't imagine.
That's amazing. So one thing I did kickstart that I don't remember, I think, one thing I did kickstart is the Crossbows and Catapults re-release.
Oh,
so this is dexterity like board game, right? Like you have these little catapults and you shoot these discs and you make like kind of a like a very like loose fitting Lego style castle that you're knocking over.
Yeah.
Everything. But they said they're going to be at Gen Con and they have something sort of like special lined up that too. Just sort of because they're obviously right. They've just published this game, so they want to sell copies. So they're trying to come up with like a quick scenario that they can show people at the con. So I think that would be a fun one, I think, to go check out. And then honestly, like, yeah, like any of the stuff that I've kickstarted over the past year, probably like it'd be fun to go see those. The one thing I would want to go to spectate is I know Wizards of the Coast is going to release like not a lot of books, but some players handbooks for the don't call it new edition of D&D. Yep. I think I'd want to go and just see what the line is like, because I think it's going to be probably pretty insane. Just to be down there.
That'll be, you know, they'll be sold out of those in like 10 minutes on
D&D. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe just hit eBay right after and pay the huge markup.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like, I think there's something about that does seem sort of fun, but I also, like you mentioned, we don't really talk about like the latest shiny stuff, because like I'm also fine just sort of waiting. Like, I'm now of the age where I don't want to do that.
Yep.
Do that. Yeah. What about you? Is there anything that you're like, oh man, I wish I could go down there for this?
There's a couple games that I picked up that like I kickstarted or pre-ordered, you know, a long time ago that come out that are coming out now, I suspect, you know, in an by design to have them ready for Gen Con. And one is Tales of the Valiant by Cobalt Press.
You've been telling me about this. It sounds really good.
I've gotten pretty enthused about it. It is one of the several projects that after the OGL fiasco of last year, a number of companies set out to create their own, you know, D&D like or D&D compatible game with a license that was like even more safe from Wizards of the Coast meddling, I guess. So this is the first, I know there's a number of different options out there. This is the first one I've seen. And, you know, I'm pretty excited by it. I have the books. I've been reading through them. It's just 5e, but you know, with a polish pass, I guess you might say, and probably pretty similar to the polish pass that like the new official D&D books are getting.
Yeah.
And, but I, you know, it's good. It's movement in the right direction using a system that like, you know, is pretty after 10 years of people playing it is, you know, it's a solid workable system, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, there, this is going to be a tangent, but I'll bring it back around in a second. So I taught my daughter, who's 9, what it means when someone says, like, roll 2d20. Like, I just taught her that a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, and so, like, it was kind of fun just being like, okay, I'm like, what if I said roll 3d6? And she was like, oh, roll three dice like that. And then I found myself saying, and this is not actually true, but I was like, cool, now you know everything you need to know to play Dungeons & Dragons. Like, right? And it's like... It was like, well, I mean, there's more to it than that, but it is sort of like the foundational stuff. And I do, as much as it sort of bums me out that like there was this big fracture that sort of happened with the OGL stuff, it is also nice that a lot of those systems that are sort of popping up are going to be using similar ideas, right? Like, so it is sort of like you're saying with Tales of the Valorant, is it Valorant or Valorant?
Tales of the Valiant.
Tales of the Valiant.
Yeah.
Yeah, with Tales of the Valiant, right? It's like, I mean, right, like you said, it's like a polish pass. It's like it's sort of like the D&D 5e that you know that you've been playing for the past decade, right? Like you can sort of still just like use this. Is there anything like that's really like uniquely new in that book that you've run across, or is it really more just like let's just make something that is separate enough that it can be its own thing and not have any legal issues?
I haven't read through all of the book, so comment, you know, send us angry tweets or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't really think there's anything really new that you haven't heard of that isn't already in the zeitgeist of D&D land, right?
Yeah.
So there's a reworking of like what we used to call like kind of race and background and stuff. And you and I have discussed this and, you know, that's a net gain. You know, I'm all for that. They have taken like inspiration and turned it into like, I think they call it luck points now. And they do more for you. You have more options of what to do for them.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
Which, to me, I think is a good idea. I always forget about inspiration when I'm running 5e. I mean, I like it. I like the idea is fine, but there's something about it that just seemed to be really forgettable at the table.
Yes.
So, so now it's luck points, and you can do more things with them. Not a lot, but like you can do more things with them. And then I think the other... So I am not really one of those people that's like, oh, the rangers, like... so useless compared to a druid if you spec it out in this particular way. I'm not like one of those people. I respect people. And if you're angry because the wizard is like outclassed by the sorcerer, if you whatever. I think that Tales of the Valiant provides a little bit of like a low level like power bump for players. So you can do a little bit more, you're a little bit more robust at the early levels, but
that's good. That's actually a good change. Yeah.
Yeah. That's something I kind of like take that on faith. Cause that's what like they say. And it's like, okay, sure. I'm not a mechanically oriented enough GM that I really noticed that like the ranger is like a little bit better, you know, in this than it was in 5e. But I think that's probably good. And D&D has always had this struggle. We've talked about it on the podcast, you know, it takes you a while before you can do the awesome stuff, you know, and this has been just a thing with D&D forever. And I get it, but you know, why not give lower level characters a little bit more of the cool stuff to do and then find some other way to reflect how they're becoming more proficient or powerful as they level up.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think we've all had the experience of running like level one D&D, and you're just like, oh, this is not great. It's like, yeah, everybody's missing all the time. Everybody's like kind of on the verge of death, death at any point. It's just like it's missing something that even kind of comes online, I think, at level two, right, or level three.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's just, yeah, there's a sort of more like a comfort in the character that you picked at that point.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's,
yeah. That I don't know about like you. Change. When I like run D&D one shots, I often, in our making like pre-gen characters, I often make them at like level three because
yeah.
That does feel like, you know, you can't do a ton of stuff, but like it, you feel more like a ranger or a wizard at level three than you do at level one, I think. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So. So I have a question. So you've been to a number of Gen Cons. Do you feel like there is something that you can do at a con of that size that like you just is unique enough that you just can't really get somewhere else? That's like absolutely like this is why you should go to a 50,000 person con.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think yes. So I think the biggest one that I've experienced is that someone is playing a game, no matter how obscure or niche. Like you will find someone running a game of it or willing to participate in a game of it at like Gen Con. You know, where am I going to go to play Advanced Squad Leader? Right,
yeah.
Like there's no one left. I mean, there's a couple of people in my part of the country that I'm aware of, you know,
but, yes, yeah,
but you can go and there'll be enough people to run a mini tournament at Gen Con or, you know, for example, I'm not saying that there's a squad leader tournament running this year at Gen Con, but in the past there have been, and I've participated in them. Mm-hmm. So I think to me, that's a big draw. Like I have a lot of like quirky, weird stuff on my shelf that I'm never going to be able to run. And I let alone play.
Yeah.
And Gen Con is a chance to be like, yeah, this weird RPG that White Wolf put out in like 1998 that went nowhere. Like someone's running a game of it at Gen Con, I promise.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
You know, I guess you can do that. You could say that about the internet too, right? You know, you could use the internet to kind of do an online game with these sorts of things. But I don't know. And like, you know, there's something about the spectacle of Gen Con.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge big people person and stuff like that, but like I do think, you know, most of us really are hardwired to like enjoy the spectacle. And like when you walk into the dealer room of Gen Con, it is a spectacle and you have just simply never been in anything like it, you know? And to me, that's neat. It's totally understandable if that sounds like hell, you know, to you or someone else, but it's just an experience. I don't want my everyday hobby experience to be that, but it's pretty fun every now and then to feel it.
Yeah. I've been to a handful of like Comic Cons. I went to a steampunk convention at one point too. And that sense of like, you're just wandering around in a crowd of people that are enthusiastic about the same thing that you're enthusiastic about is pretty great. And I think it can feel a little bit like, oh, like I want that all the time, but that is definitely a sometimes sort of thing. But yeah.
Well, there's no, you nailed it. Like there's, you don't have to explain why you're there. You don't have to like make apologies for what you're interested in. You are one of like 300 people like at this dealer booth looking at this like super weirdo like, you know, fringe RPG, and everyone gets it, right? Like there's something like, it's, you know, it's a dumb phrase, but like it's like a safe space, right? It's like it's like, yeah, here in normal life I have to like kind of be judicious in how I expose people to like my hobbies and how much I bring those into my interactions with my friends and my coworkers. But here we are all here because we love this stuff to a stupid degree. So like there's just a certain freedom in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been thinking a lot about like, so our con, right, is like, you know, divide the number of Gen Con attendees by 1,000, right? like somewhere close. But like, yeah, like just thinking about like, you're like, what is it that makes it like worthwhile and sort of magical in its own right too, right? So we've been getting events in from people that like they want to run run games, and like no one is saying like, hey, I want to run a 5e game. Like everybody's sort of doing something like a little bit out there, and it is like, it's just, it's so invigorating to be around people that want to do that, right? Imagine yep. It's just like, you know, that's a small taste of sort of what the Gen Con experience can be. Of just like, yeah, like we're going to play this thing and we don't quite know, but like we're all into it. So it's going to work, right? We're going to kind of make it work, work together. And like, that's just, that is really, really lovely.
Yeah. There's something about being able, like when interacting with someone, to skip like the preamble where you sort of tease out like, how appropriate is it that I mention I like D&D and what are they into? You know, we're all, you know, whether we're all here at Gen Con or we're a few dozen people at RFT Con or whatever, you know, everyone is here because they're a huge dork, right? And there's,
There's one other thing I wanted to mention. So I know on Friday night, the Ennie Awards are happening.
Mm-hmm.
So a friend of the podcast, Kyle Latino of Splatbook fame, he is up for an Ennie. Like he's been nominated for his book Monstrous.
Hey, that's fantastic.
They did a Kickstarter for that. I think stuff is shipping pretty soon. I mean, I haven't seen my copy quite yet, which is totally fine, especially with Gen Con season. I'm sure they'll have some books there too, but yeah, so I've got my fingers crossed. I have voted at least once for him to win. But that's fun. So if you're going down to Gen Con and you're listening to this, do go try to check out those Ennie Awards, because I think that's a cool thing, because it's like it's almost like, I mean, I'm not going to say fan run, but like, right, it's like sort of a like the people vote for the thing that they actually want.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's pretty exciting.
I hope that they get some recognition through that, because they deserve it.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about, or should we just wrap up there?
Not really. I will mention one other kind of shiny new game that if I were at Gen Con, I'd be going to check out the booth, and that's the Dreams and Machines RPG.
I don't know what that is.
Okay. It's like a new post-apocalypse RPG, but it, I think they're aiming for like sort of hopeful post-apocalypse. So
yeah,
more like Numenera and less like Fallout, maybe, you know? And you know, anything post-apocalypse, I kind of get a kick out of. So, and especially when they seem to be aiming for a feel that's a little different than like your typical post-apocalypse. So I don't know. I'm interested in it, but at the same time, I don't have a ton to say.
Yeah. Is that genre, I've heard like hope punk or solar punk. Have you heard those terms before?
I have heard those terms before, and maybe that is what the genre is. I'm not sure. But
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I do like that people are trying to explore the idea of an apocalypse in a way that it's not just like the Mad Max hellscape.
Right? Like,
I think that's good. Right. Cause there is going to be stuff after the fall.
Right.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, I think that does it for us. Again, kind of a shorter one this week, but we wanted to just, get one of these.
Shout out to everyone heading to Gen Con.
Shout out to everyone who's heading to Gen Con. That's very exciting. Have lots of fun there on our behalf. And say hi to each other as well. So we've been Roll for Topic. We are part of the Roll for It Media Podcasting Network. Our sister show, The Splatbook, with Kyle Latino and John Corey, is great. Go listen to it. I've been catching up on some of their stuff. They did a mailbag episode recently, and just like some other conversations they've had. I just really, really enjoy how they think through and talk about RPGs and RPG design and stuff like that. So John's been mentioning a book that he's been reading that sounds really good. I think it's called The Elusive Shift, which is a little bit like about some D&D history. Have you read this as well?
No, it's one of the ones on my list, but I haven't gotten to it.
Yeah, I think I definitely want to read it. Go take a listen to them. And again, if you see Kyle or John down at Gen Con, do say hi. I know John's planning on hanging out at the booth, so you can actually see him in person and not just hear his voice. But
yeah, that's awesome.
Okay, cool. All right, well, that does it for us. So I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.